Good morning. I call this meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order and note that a quorum is present. And the first order of business is the approval of the minutes from Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Representative Petersburg, would you mind moving the minutes from Wednesday, May 1st, 2024?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the minutes of May 1st.
Thank you. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the minutes have been adopted. So we have two items on the agenda today, House File 3276 and House File 4975. And so we'll start with Representative Frazier. Welcome to the committee. And so I move that House File 3276 be placed on the general register. And I also move the A8 amendment. Representative Frazier, could you tell us about your A8 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and then good morning, members. Long time no see. glad to be back. I feel like I've been in this committee a lot this session, but I enjoy being here. The amendment, what it does is it provides for that if a local municipality or county or school board decides to adopt ranked choice voting, it can only do that by putting that question to the voters within that particular district, school district, or county, or city. And then it also provides for the appropriation that will be needed by the Secretary of State to do the rulemaking process and then ongoing maintenance and support for elections under ranked choice voting.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Discussion to the A8 amendment. Representative Acom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Cedric, or Ms. Cedric. Okay.
You can say my full name.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Cedric. Representative Frazier for adopting or for introducing this amendment. And I do think that with how big of a change ranked choice voting can be for jurisdictions, that doing it by referendum can not only help get the support, but educate people in the changes that will be happening or that they need to happen. So I thank you and I appreciate you adding this amendment.
Absolutely.
Any further discussion to the A8 amendment? Representative, any discussion? No. Okay. And I will say just for the benefit too that the appropriation in there, it still stays in line with the budget resolution and we have a fit in the other bills category, so this does not send anything out of whack with the agreement on targets nor with the budget resolution. So any further discussion to the A8? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A8 amendment has been adopted. So two-year bill as amended, Representative Frazier, and speaking, you've kind of hit the appropriation already, but any highlights on the fiscal?
No highlights, Madam Chair. Just to the bill, to ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting itself has been around for a long time, going back to the early 1900s, and becoming more popular now. And I can tell you the reason it's becoming more popular now is because we live in such polarizing and divisive times in our politics. And ranked choice voting is not a cure-all, but it is a tool that can help with that polarization and the division that we have. And the reason it can do that, it's because it requires the candidate to connect with more than just a simple closed-off base of voters. It requires that candidate to connect with a broader view of individuals because they have to rate those candidates by number. And you don't want to drive folks away or alienate folks when you know that them ranking you second, third, or fourth could ultimately depend on whether or not you win that race and get to represent, have the honor to represent those folks. What we know here in the state of Minnesota, there's often opponents of ranked choice voting often say that it doesn't do what it's designed to do, that it doesn't have higher turnout, that it doesn't diversify the candidates or the electors that ultimately get elected. What we know in the state of Minnesota is that it absolutely does that. It has driven turnout in every city that it has been adopted. It has diversified the city councils in every city that it has been adopted. It has increased civility in those cities and in those races. We know that it works here. And that is the sample size that we should be looking at because we have those facts. So we know that they work. And this is a tool. It is a tool for our democracy. It's a tool in our elections that can help with some of the things that I've just mentioned earlier. And that's all it is. It's a tool. not the end-all, be-all, but a tool. And you don't, it's not a mandate. Those local jurisdictions will have the ability to decide what they want to do. And with the amendment today, you put the questions to the voters and you let them decide if they want to use ranked choice voting as that tool. That's all we're asking, is that we allow every jurisdiction within the state to have that ability. And now, albeit that will be after the Secretary of State goes through a rulemaking process to ensure that it that there has uniformity and buy-in from our local election officials that administer these elections. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Discussion to the bill. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know enough about ranked choice voting to be dangerous, but not all the specifics. So I've always, the question I've always asked is, so what if a person only wants to vote for one candidate? Do they have to rank the others?
Representative Frazier.
Representative Petersburg, they do not. But I would say you're limiting yourself in your options, and you are wasting your opportunity to be a part of that process and to impact that race with the other individuals. Because if your individual doesn't go past the first round, then you have given up that opportunity to have an impact on the rest of the candidates in the race.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Except that that's the fallacy of that is that that makes the assumption that you want to vote for the others. I mean, there are sometimes we have candidates, maybe three or four of them, and three of them we absolutely do not want to be there. And so what you're doing is you're forcing somebody to vote for somebody, if you were to say that they should vote anyway. You're saying that you should vote for somebody that you don't want to be elected. And we've always had the belief here in the United States that you should only be compelled to vote for somebody you want to vote for. And that's why I asked the question, because you may be right that you lose that vote, but you would do that if there was no ranked choice voting as well. So it's the same thing. And I was just curious about that. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you.
Chair.
Representative Petersburg. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Petersburg, I can appreciate what you were saying there about the choice. And it is a choice. There's nothing here that compels anyone to do anything. What I say is, if you have options, you should avail yourself of those options. The whole idea of ranked choice voting is that candidates will have to avail themselves of a broader range of voters because those voters will have the opportunity to rank them. That engagement is the most important part, I believe, in this democracy.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Further discussion to the bill as amended. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Frazier, for working on this. You've done a lot of work. This bill's had probably more twists and turns than a lot of bills I've seen. You put a lot of effort into, I know, working with the Secretary of State's office to make sure this is manageable. I think the budget implications of that we're discussing here reflect that. So I'm just impressed with all the work you've done. I do think, you know, we heard a lot of compelling testimony in the Elections Committee on this as well. I think it makes a lot of sense to do this. I think it's a good system. The five cities that have done it in Minnesota, it's worked well. Mm-hmm. You know, just to the comments that were made before, you know, under this system, nobody's forced to vote for anybody. If you want to, you can vote for only one person, and then if that person doesn't make it to the second round, it's basically the same as what happens under our current system, to 40 to less than 50% of the voters. Just the person they voted for didn't get elected. So you're not obligated to, but it's, as you said, I think it would be to their advantage to do so, because even if they don't like the other candidates, there might be one they dislike less. So, you know, they could rank them second if they want to, but again, if they don't, then it's just the person they voted for didn't become elected. That's something that a lot of us in a, you know, pretty polarized environment are very familiar with already under our current system. So, you know, I think this is a good system. I'm happy to support this. It's just an option for local governments to adopt, and I appreciate all the work you've done.
Thank you. Representative, any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Representative Frazier, I just want to make sure I get the quote right about the opponents say it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Could you repeat that quote for me? I just want to make sure I get it right.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Novotny, good morning. Yeah, that is some of the arguments against ranked choice voting that opponents say that it doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. That's all I wanted.
Any further discussion to the bill? Last word on your bill, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. again, I think this is a good tool to address some of the issues that we have in our electoral politics today. And I just, what I ask for is for members, we're all elected officials. I think it is our duty and our representative democracy to find ways to provide tools that can help us in any way to be more productive in our conversations, to be more united in our conversations, and to be more civil in our conversations. And I think this tool can help us with that.
I wish to ask
your support.
Thank you, Representative Frazier, and thank you for all your work on an ever-moving bill or ever-changing bill. So I renew my motion that House File 3276, as amended, be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 3276, as amended, has been sent to the General Register. Thank you so much, Representative Frazier.
Thank you.
Our final bill on the agenda today is House File 4975, the Climate Energy Supplemental Budget Bill. And so I move that House File 4975 be placed on the General Register. And I talked with the minority members, they're aware of this too. We will not be discussing the underlying contents of the bill as it is identical as how it passed out of committee. We're only hearing the A8 amendment today. And so I move the A8 amendment on behalf of Majority Leader Long. And so Majority Leader Long, welcome to the committee, and please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Thank you, and good morning, committee members. So the amendment is related to the Minnesota CARE public option, which is a bill that I am carrying in the House. But the amendment is much narrower than the bill that had been introduced. To zoom out, last year we started the process with an actuarial analysis of looking at what it would mean to set up the option for more people to buy into Minnesota CARE. We received that analysis right before session and introduced a bill that was tailored to that analysis. But we are not in a position this year to be able to set up new funding mechanisms, given our this is not a budget year. And so we are not going to be moving forward this year with implementing the program or with setting up any funding. But one of the critical steps that we would need to take in order to set up the Minnesota CARE public option is to apply for a federal 1332 waiver to authorize us to do the Minnesota CARE buy-in approach. And so that's what this amendment would do. It would give instruction to the Department of Commerce, who was the agency responsible for applying for our 1332 waivers, and it would set forward the program that we had outlined in the bill for the waiver application. And then if the waiver application is approved by the federal government, that would give us more information in future sessions to make decisions about how we would proceed with Minnesota CARE buy-in. So that's the purpose of this amendment. And just to remind us why we are doing this in the first place, we know that there are many people right now who are not receiving adequate health care insurance or who have no insurance at all. And the actuarial analysis shows that if we were to move forward with the Minnesota CARE public option, it would help over 100,000 Minnesotans, that 30% of those are currently uninsured Minnesotans who would be able to get access to this insurance. And then 70% of them are folks who are on the individual market. And these are individuals who largely are on the bronze plans, which have an average deductible of about $7,000. So these are essentially folks who are getting catastrophic coverage and often aren't able to use their insurance because of the high deductibles. And that results in really negative health consequences when people are delaying care or aren't able to afford care. So this would be a way to help make sure that all Minnesotans have access to better health insurance, better care, and better health results. So I'd ask for member support.
Thank you, Majority Leader Long. Discussion to the A8 amendment. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my first question would be, I know some of the conversation last night was that this was being sent here today to talk about germaneness. Is that kind of how the intention of the conversation is supposed to be limited to, is to get that, or is there going to be a little room for further discussion on this.
Representative Schumacher, so the germaneness within the committee, this does fit within the Commerce, so it fits within that. So I don't think we need to have a conversation about the germaneness of doing this in committee. In terms of what we'll discuss, as I mentioned, we're not going to discuss the underlying bill at all. But in terms of this amendment, you can have, I'll give as much leeway as needed to ask the questions you want to on both substance and policy. So Representative Schumacher.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, for that. I guess then my first question is, Representative Long, you mentioned that this is different than, the amendment is different than what your House file was on this. And so do we have a fiscal note or an idea of what the fiscal implications are going to be for this amendment, and how much of the fiscal note from the House file 4745 can we look at as guidance for long-term implications, specifically for the cost to the state in the out years that weren't part of the current budget horizon?
Representative Schumacher, Representative Long, and I also see Mr. Harney is here too, if you, Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the question, Representative Schumacher. So this amendment would not be establishing the program, so the out year costs that you're referring to would not be triggered by this amendment. We would need to come back in a future legislative session to set up a program and figure out any funding mechanism for that. All that this does is move forward with the federal waiver application, and we are making an adjustment to the HCAF appropriation that the legislature authorized last year to cover those costs, so there would be no fiscal impact of this amendment.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can I take that to understand as well that this doesn't make any changes to the budget targets then that we have?
Representative Schumacher, that's correct. And we can go into more detail about it, but it was the $22 million appropriation from HCAF last session. And we can have Mr. Harney explain more, but no, it does not change anything with the budget resolution or budget target agreement. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this doesn't establish it, but there's still the parameters that are set within the amendment here, because it's still a substantial amendment of multiple pages. The establishment's still there so that they can write the waiver with parameters with that. So how different are the parameters in this amendment versus the parameters that were set in the bill?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The parameters are from the bill, and so in order to have the sufficient detail for them to provide a federal waiver, we do need to give them some detail about what the program would look like, and that's what this does. But there would still be ability to make adjustments, and we give flexibility to the agencies to be able to make adjustments.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I understand from something I've read on this that they have to be similar to, but not totally locked into what the parameters are here. That's right. Okay. With that, and so I guess with the parameters that are set here and some of the assumptions that they'd be working with to apply for this waiver, and the extension with that, the money for, say, reinsurance that was used, there is no money after 2026 for that. But even if we were to fully implement your bill as it was originally introduced, it wouldn't be ready until 2027, so there's already a gap. Now, this amendment takes out the implementation piece, so we have to come back and do that. Do you think there will be a delay in the implementation piece? Is there going to be a longer gap than what we were seeing between when consumers, ratepayers had reinsurance to help them out and before this would be implemented?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. I think that will depend on the speed with which the waiver application is processed. I think certainly my hope would be that 2027 would be a possible implementation date, but if the waiver application took more time, it could be 2028, so there could be some gap years. I do think, though, that reinsurance is a good analogy in terms of the waiver, which is that while the state has the authority to move forward with reinsurance, we're not required to do so, and so this would be similar, that we would allow the state to move forward if we were approved for the federal waiver application, but there would be no requirement on our end to move forward.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Long, for
for helping me understand this overall. The proposal, the what the department will be submitting for a waiver request, I know in the Millman report there were multiple options and different scenarios to be able to work with, and all of those had different implications connected to them. When it comes to reimbursement rates for providers of care, how what within this framework sets that up, and what are the reimbursement rates going to be?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would reflect the Milliman report, and it's the 1E model is what this bill, this amendment would reflect, and the reimbursement rates in this proposal currently are Medicare rates.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that. Then if we have, well, I'll save that for more of a closing on just what that shift is going to mean at Medicare rates when they're lower than what the cost of care is. But to that point, is there anything within the waiver application that will guarantee that the services that would be paid for at the Medicare rates would be guaranteed to be offered by providers as it is today?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Medicare is the floor, and what we have in the amendment, we wouldn't be setting up the program, as I mentioned, with the waiver application. So we would be coming back, and certainly that's something that a future legislature could discuss and address. I will dispute that Medicare's rates are below the cost of care. At least health economists who I've spoken to say Medicare rates are pretty close to the cost of care, if not a little above.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the assumption is that this would have, the assumption is once this was put in place that we'd have about 100,000 people in that plan, or that would have that option. And then this is being set up through the, our, the waiver would assume that this would be set up through our current managed care systems.
Representative Long.
Madam Chair, this does not, the waiver application doesn't change the underlying Minnesota Care program. So those would be decisions for a future legislature.
Representative Schumacher.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I think as far as questions go, that's probably about just to understand what this is trying to do and where this goes. I would just say, kind of as we look at this, this is the second time that this proposal has been heard this year. After we got the report back from Millman, and there's been maybe 20 minutes, maybe half an hour now that for discussion on this, and it's an important piece here that we're asking the federal government to allow us to do, and there's a lot of consideration that I know the federal government will be having. I know there's a lot of concerns I hear from the provider community in general, even at the Medicare rate, that especially for the split that we have here, if there's 100,000 people that are going to be involved with it, 70,000 are already getting coverage through the MinSure system, which is going to be paying out at more of a commercial rate, which is higher than the cost of care. Now we're shifting those people to the Medicare rate for reimbursement, and so we have 70,000 new people who are going to be paying less, whose reimbursements will be less to providers than what we have today, and that's concerning whenever we're shifting things, because it's still going to be paid from somewhere. And if we have 70,000 new people that are going to be receiving the care, and the doctors are the ones paying for that because they're the ones having the lesser rate, I think we're going to see trouble with who wants to provide those. I think we already see that in dental services and other services where the reimbursement rate doesn't reflect what the cost is and what they have there. And so I just raise that concern entirely for this whole proposal as a whole, but then the process too is a little troubling on how we've had this come forward, and
and what we're seeing here for just how we are going to go about this system and what we have there. And that's all I have, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Long, I have some questions as well. I mean, first of all, a couple of items from my understanding. One is that the agencies have said that this can't really be implemented until 28 at the earliest. And under the structure that I've seen, I don't know if it's still in the amendment, but it's kind of a phased-in implementation that many people wouldn't even be eligible or couldn't get on it until 29. So that, I think, responding to a kind of a question that Representative Schumacher raised. But some questions that I have, first of all, the fact that there's no new appropriation needed, it doesn't indicate that we're not spending money on this. And so a couple questions. One is, how much money is left in the account that has been used, that we appropriated before for the various studies on this issue, that is going to be tapped to do the further studies that are in this amendment?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Liebling. So there was $2.5 million that was allocated in the previous amount for the actuarial analysis. My understanding is that the entire amount of that was not spent, but I do not know the exact amount. This would make available, as needed, up to $22 million, and certainly the agencies would need far less than that to be able to complete the federal waiver.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I know there is money left over from that other pot of $2.5 million, but my next question was going to be about the $22 million, because in the amendment, starting on line 2.12, you're changing that, how that $22 million is going to be used. And originally, it said it was to implement a Minnesota public option health care plan. Now it says it's a fund for agency initiatives related to. So there was a fiscal note, a preliminary fiscal note, that comes to about $22 million. And we don't have that in our packets today, I guess, because, I guess it doesn't relate to the amendment. I'm not really sure why, but you know, it talks about the building up the apparatus to be able to do, you know, to get started. This obviously doesn't, $22 million doesn't even come close to providing the coverage, but it would be, it does oddly come to right around $22 million to sort of set up the structures. And so the way the amendment is written, my question to you is it contemplated that this money could be used, or does this language allow the money to be used as is set out in this almost $22 million fiscal note? That was, let's see, it's the fiscal note is to House File 4745-1A, which I guess was a previous amendment iteration.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the changes that we would, as it's specified in the amendment, allow for the Commissioner of Commerce to use this funding for the waiver application. That's the only change we're making in terms of where the money is going to be used. And there's no additional legislative language that would direct them to use this money in any other way.
Representative Liebling. And the amendment is substantially different than the bill. And I think you've walked through the fiscal. There is no fiscal note to this bill because of the way it is set up and the way Representative Long described. So there's not a buried football anywhere around that. So just so you're, and I think you knew that, but Representative Lee.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. But I would like to ask nonpartisan staff then, because I'm concerned about what this language does allow, because it says, you know, right now in the amendment, it says $22 million in fiscal year 2025 is from the Healthcare Access Fund for agency initiatives related to a Minnesota public option health care plan. And then it goes on to say that the Commissioner of Human Services shall transfer an amount sufficient to develop and submit the waiver. But it doesn't, I don't think that language limits it to the transferring for, it doesn't prevent transferring other things. I mean, the language for agency initiatives related to is a little vague. So I'm kind of wondering whether that would allow tapping this money for what is in this fiscal note.
Representative Long, do you want to respond to that? And do you want Mr. Harney to walk through any of the fiscal? Would that be helpful to Representative Liebling's point? Representative Long.
I don't know that I have anything to add to what I said before. So if fiscal staff wants to, I'm happy to listen.
Mr. Harney, would you want to come down?
Madam Chair, Joe Harney, House Fiscal. So Representative Liebling, again, looking at lines, beginning at line 2.15, for agency initiatives related to a Minnesota public option health care plan, line 2.17 provides further direction as to what that specifically means there. I understand that it's confusing, but my opinion, and I'm not calling balls and strikes on this, but my opinion is that for agency initiatives related to is tied to the language authorizing the transfer for the amount sufficient to. But if that's at all unclear with the author's intent of the amendment, then that language could be cleaned up.
Representative Liebling.
And thank you. And Mr. Harney, while you're there, could you give us that amount that's left over in the, from the 2.5 million?
Yeah.
Mr. Harney.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, earlier in session, an estimate from the department was that there was approximately $1 million left over from that appropriation. That amount was before further analysis from Millman was conducted. So there would have to be a recheck of that amount left over in the balance after that analysis was conducted by the department.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Okay, well, you know, I have concern that the, you know, just on this one little piece, but that the language is vague here and that the way it's written would allow the further work and investment of the $22 million in building this infrastructure, notwithstanding that the author is saying that we wouldn't be authorizing implementation of the program. So I just want to put that out there. And then, you know, and I just want to say one other thing, and I think it's well known that I'm opposed to going forward with this, so I'm not going to make a big pitch on it now, but I do just want to say one piece, and that is this estimate about how many people would be covered that the author referred to, over 100,000, 30% of them uninsured. I just want to note that because of legislation we passed last year, by the time this would be implemented, there would be a far lower rate of uninsurance. So if people are thinking about how this is going to help providers, because people who are currently uninsured will have insurance, this is something we talk about frequently in the HHS world, you know, that it's better for people to have some coverage because then their uncompensated costs are lower and so on. But the pool of uninsured, and actually our uninsured rate here in Minnesota is at a historic low right now. I think it's like 3.4% was the latest, which is a great thing for us. And it will be lower by the time this is ever implemented just because of legislation we already passed. So when we think about, you know, the impact on our system and what it will mean to have the rates for some people that are lower than commercial and all of that that Representative Schumacher was talking about, the estimates in the Millman report was off because it didn't take account of the fact that our uninsurance rate will be lower. And so I'll leave it there, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for those of us that are a little bit more simple and not really involved with a lot of this from day to day, I want to just kind of paraphrase what I think I've heard their testimony so far and the ramifications and some of my concerns about why we don't have more financial information about into the future. So what I understand is that we aren't asking for any new money this year, and so therefore it doesn't impact targets. and we aren't sure that there's going to be any need into the next biennium for TAIL, so we don't talk about that. But as we just heard from a representative over there, that there is the capacity of $22 million being available for the initiatives and for the commissioner to create the application for a waiver to a program that we know is going to have future costs. And again, one of the concerns I have is that, again, we're in a situation where, well, it doesn't cost us anything today, so therefore we don't need to worry about it. Well, actually, I think that's the very reason why we should be worried about it, because we don't have that information. We don't know what we are committing ourselves to into the future. And I got to believe that with the parameters that are needed for the federal waiver program in order to just apply for that, that there is some parameters that we anticipate the program is going to have, including the anticipated participants, which means we should have some financial information. I've seen fiscal notes that have had a lot more assumptions about what the program may or may not be and still provide us with an answer. So my question to you is, beyond the $22 million that's currently available, what is your anticipated cost to get it set up and to running the program, at least for the first year, whenever that occurs? Do you have any estimate? Does anybody have an estimate of what that might cost us into the future?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So knowing that this is not in the amendment, but happy to speak to what the bill itself would project. So the Milliman analysis indicates that for if it were to be set up in plan year 2027, that the cost for providing coverage for those 100,000 folks would be, in addition to the federal pass-through, assuming that the federal waiver reflects what the Milliman report would be, $208 million. To put that in context, our reinsurance costs are currently $178 million projected per year for that, that plan year. But one of the benefits of moving forward the waiver application is that we won't just be making assumptions about what the federal contributions would be. We would actually have hopefully approved waiver from the federal government that would tell us exactly what the federal contribution would be.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And so what I think I heard was there's a possibility, a guesstimate, shall we say, of $208 million to run this program. I'm not Representative David, so that's a lot of money to me. And I think that's important for us to kind of know what we are committing ourselves to into the future. And I think that's an important discussion for us to have, because it is part of the cost of the program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'll just note we're not committing ourselves to any further spending with the A8 amendment. So, further discussion. Representative Burr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little confused in here this morning, Madam Chair. We just had this conversation when we had Representative Mueller, who had an amendment, and I had really hoped that was sort of a worked out amendment. It wasn't completely, but we debated it. It was small in comparison to this. This is huge. This is complicated. This isn't even agreed upon on your side, Representative Liebling. I always appreciate your comments. I listen intently to what you say, and your counterpart, well, actually not your counterpart, Senator Marty was just talking about it in the Senate. So I really, really, really do not understand what we're doing here. Madam Chair, it sounds like we've had minimal conversation about this language in the proper committee. If this is not the bill, if this isn't the bill that was even debated, I'm not sure exactly what we're doing, because this is Ways and Means. We're not supposed to be doing big, huge policy pieces. We should not be doing this amendment. This is out of order. I understand that it's your priority and you're the majority leader, but this is out of order for this committee. We should not be debating it here. We are not the experts in this kind of policy. This is heavily, heavily, heavily a policy decision. It doesn't belong in Ways and Means. This really needs to go back to Chair Liebling's committee or other committees where they have experts there. I know we have a room full of people that are listening to this and are concerned about it. We've got a letter from Medical Alley that said that this is going to heavily stress the hospitals, which of course we should be concerned about. But again, none of those things are within our purview. We should be talking about fiscal implications. And we don't have a fiscal note. So I'm really confused as to what we're doing, why we're doing this here. If this is supposed to go back to the Committee of Jurisdiction, maybe it needs to go back there. But I'm so confused. You know, and maybe it's because we were on the floor till nearly 1 a.m. And I put that on us. You know, we had a lot to say. They were very controversial bills that we opposed. But here we are at 9 a.m. Discussing policy in Ways and Means. Don't have a fiscal note. It hasn't had the proper vetting in the proper committees yet again. I don't understand why we're here. I adamantly oppose this. I just listened to Senator Marty in the Finance Committee. I watched the video. It was on Blois Olson this morning, so it was very easy to access. And he voted with the Republicans to remove this part of the bill. So I don't understand now why we are going back to reinsert this on the House side. It has no path in the Senate. I don't understand what we're doing, Madam Chair. And I don't have a question. I'm just very confused, and I don't even know why this is before us.
Thank you, Representative Rarick. Before you got here, Representative Schumacher asked a series of questions that answered a lot of what you said, or a lot of what you addressed, and I'll just say it again. Within this committee, we have the Commerce budget. This bill fits squarely within that discussion, so it is germane for this committee. We moved it back here for that reason, to have the discussion here. I did tell Representative Schumacher in the committee that because of some of what you just said, that I, you know, am being generous with the leeway today, and we're debating policy and substance. I will also say this doesn't have a fiscal note because we also discussed earlier what the $22 million HCAF funding is for the waiver specifically, not anything that we amended. The A8 amends the bill. So some of the things, I just bring you up to speed on some of what was said earlier and some of that. So I just want you to know we did have some discussion around that. And so we are giving leeway to have a broader discussion on the A8 amendment. Mayor. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you, Majority Leader Long. So as I understand, the 1332 waiver is different than the Medicaid waiver. And one of the requirements is for us to have the enabling legislation to apply for. So to my understanding, this is just setting the application process, which has got some requirement from the CMS that we have to have a process ready, and we're not implementing any new program until CMS approves, you know, the federal government, the Treasury, the Human Services from the federal. They have to review that application. Is that correct that there will be input from the public, and also there will be a comment period before this program is implemented?
Representative Wong.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that's correct, Representative Knorr. This is only moving forward with the waiver application, and the result for us is that we as a state would have better information in future legislative sessions about what we could set up for Minnesota Care buy-in, and we would know what the federal contribution would be if we set up such a program.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's
further discussion to the bill. Representative Prisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. So I'm not going to really speak to the bill as much. I'm going to speak to the process just quickly. I was talking to my son about this a little bit, and he reminded me this morning as I got up before I got coffee, he says, Dad, you guys were there till late in the evening. You're rushing through this huge bill on Ways and Means. He said, Dad, this reminds me of the lack of forethought and planning that whenever we were doing projects, you would simply say to me, you couldn't find your backside with both hands tied behind your back. And so I think we have problems with this.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. And to process, and perhaps I can address some of this and let Leader Long be able to focus more on the substance. We'll see. But, I mean, my understanding is that the public option bill passed through the Commerce Committee, was approved by the Commerce Committee. This is a much, much, much more limited version of that. So, Representative Rarick, this was approved by the relevant committee, passed through that relevant committee with an affirmative vote. This is in the Commerce bill. So this provision was approved by the Commerce Committee, is being added to the Commerce budget in this committee just because that full because this is a smaller piece. It was not added on the House floor. It is relevant and allowed to be added in this committee. It was approved by the folks with subject matter jurisdiction in that particular committee as this relates to that. And so there's not any process concerns. There may be discussion about the substance, and again, I'm sure Leader Long will address that. But as far as process is concerned, this absolutely fits the way that we do things, and I appreciate the work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And after my testimony or questions, you had commented that we aren't technically committing ourselves to any future expense. And I think literally that's true. However, I sure hope we're not spending and appropriating $22 million on a program that we're not going to set up. And so there's an argument there that says, well, if you're going to put this in place, we are intending to cost us some money. So I just want to make sure that we're transparent there.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Further discussion to the bill. Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your comments. I apologize I was late. It was a very, very late night, and you know I've been struggling with my health off and on. So, but I would say that 20 minutes of discussion in commerce isn't sufficient. We spent months talking about Minture, and it was substantially less than this. It's basically a website. So this is a substantial issue. This is more than just the camel's nose under the tent. This is a substantial policy change and a policy direction. It had about 20 minutes in one committee. I think it probably should have gone to more, in my estimation. So, and we are not the committee to discuss this kind of policy, whether it's in the Commerce bill or not, and whether it's narrowing or not. Maybe that should be a conversation in the Commerce Committee, and maybe a couple of the health committees as well. This is a significant change. You know, again, we should not be doing this here. And I'm glad that we didn't do it on the House floor, because that's really not appropriate. But I'm glad we're doing it here. At least we're doing it somewhere. But we should be doing it in the committee where you've got the issue area experts. And there are a couple of us in this room, but I am not one. You know, we've got Representative Liebling, Representative Schumacher, and a few others. We don't even have Representative O'Driscoll here, who is our commerce person. So this is not the proper place for this discussion, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rarick. Further discussion? Lead Rockwell to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I do want to thank DFL leadership and DFL members for not tacking this on as an amendment on the House floor and actually pulling it into a committee. I know that and it's not the first time this has happened, but usually germaneness discussions, the majority party, whoever that is, tends to give themselves a little bigger strike zone for stuff and a little bit tighter strike zone to the minority party. In this case, I think it would have been a bad thing if this was just ruled to be germane and done on the House floor. So whatever committee process it goes through, I do want to thank you. That some of us on the side of the aisle recognize that this is better addressing it in committee than on the House floor, so that is appreciative. Every end of session is always unique and weird, and you know, I find myself in this strange position of getting up and saying, well, I want to listen to the healthcare experts like Tina Liebling and John Marty about issues on healthcare. You know, that's who we should be listening to. So I don't mean to diminish your progressive street cred, Representative Liebling, by agreeing with you. Hopefully that doesn't tarnish your reputation in the DFL caucus when you got Republicans saying that you're we have different positions on the issue, I recognize that you have a much higher level of subject expertise on this than, let's just be candid, most people in the legislature do. That comes from experience, knowledge in your previous positions. So I don't want to diminish your street cred by agreeing with you. But I do want to ask a serious question, and I think I know the answer to it, but if you would indulge me, if that's okay, Madam Chair, or should I direct my questions?
Direct your question A8 amendment, which is I moved on behalf of Representative Long.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative Groff.
Madam Chair, Representative Long, so we have a letter from Medical Alley, and it says that your amendment, and I'll just quote it, poses a significant financial risk to hospitals due to a greater patient population paying lower reimbursement rates. And it also cites that, according to the report from Minnesota Community Measurement, commercial plans pay 207% of what Medicare pays. as this proposal is structured with Medicare reimbursement rates, providers will receive less for the same services they were providing previously to patients under private plans. Are they right?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Garofalo. So I think that they are not entirely right, no. I think that they are missing that there is also substantial uncompensated care that will be reduced under this proposal should it move forward, which this amendment would not do. And so we know that there would be 30% of folks who I mentioned in my opening comments who are currently uninsured who would now be insured. And we know that the remaining 70% right now are grossly underinsured. And so oftentimes those folks aren't paying for their care because they have such high deductibles. And so I think there's a broader picture to it. And I will also note that this amendment doesn't set the rate that we would pass in a future legislature. It sets Medicare rates as the floor, and that's a conversation we can have in the future.
Lee Grafflo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In that case, Representative Long, how would we pay for it?
Representative Long.
Madam Chair, Representative Grafflo, that's a very good question for a future legislature.
Lee Grafflo.
So thank you. Madam Chair, members, so Minnesota has a balanced budget requirement. This isn't Washington. We can't deficit spend. Our tails are already financially are messed up. I'm not going to go on a long speech about this because I think the likelihood of this legislation based on the comments of others in the DFL, the majority party and the governor, it's not likely to get enacted this session. I would just say that the overall option, this public option, that this letter from Medical Alley reinforces an argument that's been said many times, many years, is that with hospitals already under severe financial distress, expanding such a reimbursement structure would put them in a situation where they would face the risk of severe closure or operational closure. And this is something that has been consistently shared with us for those from the health systems. This is why we haven't done this before. This is why when previous DFL legislatures with a DFL governor have looked at this, this has not been done. So I'm opposed to the amendment. Again, I'm not particularly worried about it becoming law this session, but I would urge members to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion to the bill or to the A8 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Majority Leader Long, last word on the A8 amendment.
I would ask for member support. I appreciate Representative Garofalo's thanks for our indulgence to bring the amendment back before Ways and Means. Representative O'Driscoll thanked me as well on the floor. We're trying to respect the requests of the minority with regard to process on this, and I would ask for folks' support.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, what am I doing? I'm moving the eight. We have the eight amendment. I apologize. This is like a very simple procedural thing, but it's just late. So, so no, seeing no further discussion on the A8 amendment, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the A8 amendment has been adopted. So now we have I renew my motion that House File 4975 as amended be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and House File 4975 as amended has been placed on the general register. And we will meet on Monday, so just please keep an eye out for information and posting on that. And that is all of our business for today, and we are adjourned.
Yeah, well, today's today.